It's a two-point Sacramento lead. We're down to 7 seconds. Bryant putting the move on Christie. Rebound O'Neal. Coming up short. Ori for the win.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is SportsNet's weekly Raptors and NBA podcast.
Sometimes weekly.
Sometimes weekly.
Took a week off.
Yeah, we take some weeks off. But
it was cold.
Too cold. Actually, it's only getting colder, but we'll still be here. I am Dave Zarum, at Dave Zarum. With me, as always, my co-host, J.D. Bunkus, here every week at J.D. Bunkus.
That's right. That's where I'm at.
On Twitter. Remember, you can catch the show on iTunes, on sportsnet.ca every Tuesday, or almost every Tuesday, and occasionally on the fan radio networks as well. J.D., man, we got a cool show today.
We do.
I'm excited about this one.
I'm very excited about this. I will say this. When we were entering, I had a lot more cojones until we met him. I was coming in with the whole, like, yo, I didn't like this guy during his career.
And that guy being none other than Robert Horry.
Mr. Big Shot.
You know, there's going to be a lot of NBA players coming to town over the next few weeks promoting the All-Star Weekend that's happening.
Hopefully
here.
Some of them drop by in the studio.
Yes, Robert Horry was one of them. You know, he was here last week in studio for the full hour. Is going to be Robert Horry, the full 45 minutes, whatever. And it was a lot of fun. I hope, you're right. I hope more players come through, because if they're anything like Horry was...
I will say that Robert Horry's got a big personality, and it really comes through in this pod, and it was really fun chatting with him. He wasn't very tight. He was loose with his commentary.
Very.
Loose with his answers.
Very.
Took some shots, as a big shot does, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good. You know, we talked about everything. We talked about his days on the Spurs and Coach Pop, who I didn't know that, but he doesn't like. We talked about his days on the Lakers, his big shots. The league today, and Alabama had just won the title, and that was his alma mater.
AAU ball. We hit it all. We hit all the high notes.
But first, I just want to say really quick, you know, we had all this, we had the Bowie intro song. We'll have Bowie on the
show. Pod?
Well, his music.
Oh.
It's going to be hard to get Bowie on the
pod.
That
would have been something.
But, you know, we didn't have a show last week, so I thought it was only fitting. But I was thinking on the way over here, you know, what NBA player is the equivalent to David Bowie? And the criteria, I think, is like someone who's universally liked and who really... I don't want to say evolved, but changed a lot through the years.
And slept with Mick Jagger.
Yes.
That makes
it tough. That makes it tough.
It's going to be tough.
But think on it, JD. We'll come back to the end of the show because I need to think on it too. But who's the David Bowie of the NBA? That's the big question.
That's the theme of the show. I will answer coming
until
up.
Until then, Robert Horry, I hope you enjoy this. We certainly did.
Hi, DeMar DeRozan of Toronto Raptors.
This is Jamal Murray.
Hey, it's Kalo.
This is Jonas Valanciunas.
And you're listening to Free Association.
Hey, this is Matt Bonner, the Red Rocket, and you're listening to Free Association.
But pulled in just behind the bridge, he lays her down. He frowns, gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed the diamond there.
That can be expensive, though. Like, because if you buy one something, the other one has to get it, too.
Hey, Sam, are we rolling?
We just get cupcakes.
All right, cool. Welcome to Free Association, Robert Horry. Thrilled to have you in studio, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations. Roll Tide, Alabama.
Oh, Roll Tide.
We're not too far removed from you guys winning the title, so congratulations.
Yeah, only if we could do it in basketball.
So right, that might be a little while.
It's going to be a long while.
Yeah. It's going to be better.
If I didn't do it, it probably won't get done. I'm just kidding.
Nice and
just
humble.
Kidding.
You were saying you got in at halftime to Toronto
yes.
for the game.
Yes.
And you had quite the cab driver.
Oh, I had the guy. It was funny. I was like, can you put the game on? He said, I don't think I have that. I said, no, you got satellite. Put it on satellite. He's like, what's satellite? I'm like, dude, really? I'm like, it was funny though, but he finally put the game on, but he didn't know how to put the sound in the back where I was, so I had this sound blaring him. You know, he was about an 80-year-old man, so I know right now his ears are still ringing.
Right. Were you able to catch any of it on TV?
I got to my hotel and I was able to catch the last 6 minutes of the third and, of course, all of the fourth quarter.
And the second half was really, really the exciting part, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, the onside kick was amazing.
Right,
something
right.
Bama would never do, and they pulled it out of their hat. And I tell everybody, they did two things in that game that you weren't accustomed to doing. that onside kick and them throwing to their tight end.
Yeah, exactly.
Who had 208 yards catching, was like the most in his whole career.
And he sealed it, right? It's that guy, 88
yes,
Howard.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he sealed that win for them, I thought. So listen, Robert Horry, you're here to talk All-Star Weekend, I assume.
Yeah, he's here for All-Star Weekend.
About Alabama.
Well,
we can come back to it. I'll be honest, though. I've exercised all my talking points about that game last night.
You don't have any other off-season thoughts?
Number 88.
Recruiting thoughts? No, you're good there?
Yeah, they should get a running back because they're about to lose theirs.
So the NBA is offering a full schedule of NBA All-Star events to bring fans greater to the Toronto area into the game. They're offering a they've got tickets you can purchase on NBATickets.com. For center court, the NBA All-Star Celebrity Game, the NBA All-Star Practice, and the BBVA Compass Rising Stars Challenge, which I probably will watch that game because Chris Daspersenkis is going to be in it.
I watch that game every year. It's a good one. It's like it's a Globetrotters game, basically, but it's cool.
It's a prerequisite. What's the things to come, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. I also like to see the dynamic between the players in that young game. You know, who's the alpha dog amongst that group? Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff really stands out.
For me, it's the three-point competition. That's the highlight of All-Star Weekend for me. I think it's, like, you got to agree, right? Like, that's the premier event. There's so many good shooters in the NBA. Guys really want to be in that competition. Like, the best guys don't want to be in the dunk contest, but the best shooters want to be in the three-point contest. I always love that.
It's amazing how that works out. You think you want to at least show your prowess on what I can do dunking-wise, you know? But now it's like, okay, I'm a trade ball. I want to go up and show you that I'm the best three-point shooter. You know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. So, I'm waiting to see.
And are you not an alumni of the Shooting Stars competition?
No, I'm not alumni.
I thought you were in it with the Spurs one year.
You know,
You've been asked before.
I've been asked to do it, you know, but I'm not an alumni of it. You know, the thing about me is, like, I don't like being a part of it, but I like being a part of it. I want to be a fan. You know, I think a lot of times people forget that you want to be a fan first, you know?
You'd be like one of the first overall choices for that fit, like that half-court shot, though, the big shot. Like, that's your calling card. Like, you got
to
take that.
You know, it's funny part. I hate to admit it. I did. I was in it once.
Right. Oh, you were. I knew it. We lost.
I didn't want to say we lost to Chris Bosh. I'm like, oh, come on, man. So we lost, and, like, we made our three shots that we were supposed to make. Bam, bam, bam. Then we go to half court. And we didn't. It was me and Westbrook, and I forget the young lady we were with, but we could make a shot, and we lost in the finals. Yeah. I'm so mad.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. I do now. Now that you say it, I do remember. I remember the Bosh shooting it. Yeah, the half court shot took for forever. For both teams.
Yeah, and the first time we did it, we had the quickest time out of everybody. We made all our shots fast, and everybody was like, "Oh, this is a team to beat." But we lost in the finals.
It happens that way. You've made up for it in your career in other moments like that, fortunately, that matter a little bit more. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, JD mentioned you like the three-point contest better than dunk contest. We were talking to, I spoke to Vince Carter recently. We got in our magazine here, a big feature looking back at that 2000 dunk contest. And he's walking through, breaking down dunk by dunk, all his stuff. Were you in the house for that one in 2000?
Actually, I wasn't. You know, when I was playing in All-Star, it was not like it is now. You get 2 weeks off. Back then, you only got those 4 days off.
Right, yeah.
So you took advantage of it. You didn't want to be around. No basketball. You just want to decompress and say, hey,
you're on a beach somewhere.
Right, yeah. So but I watched that slam dunk contest because everybody knew who Half Man, Half Amazing was, and you wanted to see the things. He just brought a whole new dynamic to the slam dunk contest that kind of opened the doors up for Blake Griffin, Dwight Howard, and all these other guys who came behind him. But, you know, he was just amazing. And to watch him, the thing that you hate is, like, now you see him play, like, he doesn't really dunk anymore. Like,
yeah, it's not. Every once in a while, it's really not the same, though.
Exactly. He's like 38 years old now, though.
But he's still playing. I'm shocked by that.
Right.
Well, he's a great example. We talked to Jalen Rose about this. He's a great example for younger players on how to evolve as a player. You know, a guy who relied, I don't know if rely is the word, but obviously his athleticism, which is a huge part of his game.
Yeah.
Now he's older. He doesn't have the hop anymore, but he's still effective. He still gets minutes.
He came a clutch 3-point shooter.
The thing about it is he's a great example of telling kids you have to have the skill sets to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, don't just be one dimensional. Even though people don't understand, he did what he's doing now, but he just got overshadowed by his athleticism, him going to the hole, jumping over people, dunking and doing his thing. But he always had that skill set.
Yeah.
But now he just took one part of his game, which was the dunking part, and put that in his back pocket. So he's just showing his whole overall skill set.
One thing I'm curious, actually, just thinking about this, with Vince, from your perspective, I heard Kobe once said he never had a true rival. And for a while there, it felt like Vince was supposed to kind of be that guy. Like, we're talking about the success that his career has become in terms of evolving into kind of this player. But you probably never saw it playing out this way for Vince. Like, right? The ceiling was supposed to be higher for him.
But, you know, the thing is, you got to realize it all boils down to your team. You know, you develop rivals. Like, for instance, Doug Christie was Kobe's rival.
Interesting.
Because they were winning. They were trying to compete with us to win an NBA title. Vince Carter wasn't on a team that could compete for a title. So even though when they played head-to-head, it was an interesting matchup, he didn't become a rival because his team didn't win. You know, rivals develop because teams win, and that's where all this comes together. For instance, you look at back then, it was, you know, us versus the Kings, and back even you go further back, it was the Lakers versus the Celtics. Even though they only played twice a year, it was a rival because those were the top dogs. Nobody cares about people who don't win.
And also, it takes the playoff matchups. Like, you got to meet each other in the playoffs in that moment. Right?
And I remember those Kings matchups, especially 0-2 when you hit it. I liked those Kings teams. Those were those were exciting teams. I liked them.
Very exciting. JD's got a bone to pick.
You should have been in the paint in 0-2. You should have been down there rebounding with the bigs, and you're out there and you catch that ball and you shoot that three.
But you know, the funny part about that play is Kobe was supposed to drive and kick it back to me.
Yeah, right.
If he couldn't get to the basket.
I think that was
he got to the basket, and he just missed the layup. And then Shaq missed the layup, and then Vlade did what most bigs are taught to do. If you can't get it down the stretch, tip it out. And people forget, I was a center, high school, college, so that's what I was taught. So in my back of my mind, I was like, I'm not going in there because he's going to tip it right out here.
That's interesting.
And I'm going to J him up.
And, of course, everybody remembers, too, the Vlade post-game stuff coming at you. That was a lucky shot.
Funny part about that, I was like, I was so mad. And at the time, I wasn't very happy with ESPN. When I was saying, if you watch the interview, I said he better read a paper or something, right? And I was going to say ESPN, but at the time I wasn't very happy with ESPN, so I didn't give him any pub.
Calculated, even in your trash talk. I like that. Well, listen, I mean, obviously that Lakers team, an iconic team you played for, but you were on a bunch of them. Like, it's when you look back on the rosters you were part of, it's really wild. And, you know, JD and I were talking about, you know, the guys who you played with who kind of stick out, and, you know, the names always come up, Kobe, et cetera, Shaq, you mentioned. One guy I got to ask you about, back on your Houston days, and I don't know why nobody talks about him today, because I think he's just one of the more fascinating characters, for lack of a better word, of my lifetime, is Vernon Maxwell.
Mad Max.
Mad Max. Yeah. Like, what happened to Mad Max, and how come people don't remember him the same way they remember so many of those great characters?
Well, you know, when you do something that's, you know, I would say out of character, but we are talking about Vernon Maxwell here. But when you do something that's, I say, detrimental to a team, it can be viewed in a certain way, and people can put a bad taste in your mouth.
What do you do?
You know, when we were playing in that championship, we made that big trade and got Clyde Drexler.
Yes. Okay.
So Clyde was a two guard. Vernon was a two guard. It's like, okay, you coming in and you're going to take my position, you know, not thinking that Clyde could slide over to the three and you can still be a two. And in the back of his mind, he never viewed it that way. Okay. You know, nobody ever sat down and said, hey, Vernon, this is what we're thinking about, how we're going to change the lineup. Because if you look at it, we did actually the team that started small ball. When you just, everybody filtered down. Clyde went from, you know, to the two, then Mario Elliott went to the three, and I went from the three to the four, and then, you know, we had Dream. And he didn't look at it. Like, he thought it was someone coming in and take his position. Then we got into the playoffs, and Vernon had a bad game. You know, Rudy T being the coach, you got a bad game, you're going to sit your butt over here. Not like what Pop did one year when Monty was having a bad game. He kept him in, and he missed a shot, you know. But he took him out, and he got mad about that. Next thing you know, he told the team that, I don't want to be here, I'm out, and he disappeared. You know, he kind of put a bad – he kind of got blackballed, and I hate it because Vernon, I tell people all the time, out of everybody I play with, if I have to go to battle on a court with someone – I'm going to choose Vernon Maxwell because he's the ultimate competitor. He's going to give it his all.
And that's what's always stuck out to me, because you hear guys talk about that with him. He's another guy like that is Alvin Robertson. Yes. You know, like, people talk about, if I'm going to war with one guy, it's that type of character.
You know, even, you know, people always like to bring up the years we won the championships when Michael wasn't playing. I said, first of all, we would have won that championship for two reasons. Mike had problems with Vernon guarding him. And then they had no answers to Dream. You know, I'd have locked Scotty up. So, you know,
we definitely won
that because Dream was a beast. You know, people don't give Dream the credit that he deserves. You know, Michael Jordan, of course, best player of all time. But right there on his heels is Olajuwon for the things he was able to bring to the game. And, you know, people always talk about he want to emulate, you know, Jordan. But bigs, if you were smart, you would emulate Dream. Look at Okafor. He's going to be one of those guys that if he can stay on that path, he's going to be a Dreamer type player.
For anybody. Offensively, certainly. I don't know about defensively.
Yeah, defensively, he's not.
Dream can guard guards. You know, he can block shots. That's why he's an all-time leading shot blocker.
And, you know, you talk about you guys kind of starting small ball, being on the cusp of that. Mm-hmm.
You got beat with Isaiah Thomas on that one, actually, because he was on our podcast, and he claims that he started small ball.
Yeah, he claims he eliminated the power forward
position.
That's
right.
But that's a...
He claims that early those early Raptors teams, his design was to eliminate the four and turn it and create small ball.
But you know what history does to memories.
I know it. You know, Isaiah is a cocky guy.
It's
so
true.
You know, I think about his idea. I will give him credit for having the second best playoff run ever in basketball with Detroit Pistons. Yeah. You know,
well, as a player, I mean, he was another guy like people remember him, but they don't remember how good he was.
People don't understand. He was one of his ball handling skills doesn't get talked about. You know, I will give him that. He was a good guard, a really good guard, but doesn't get, you know, I think the fact that MJ hated him kind of made his dream team.
He doesn't have a gold medal.
Yeah, he got screwed on that one.
You know, now that we're on the Pistons, actually, a little bit there, and Isaiah, the one guy I've always been kind of curious to ask you about, because when you wrote your Players Tribune article, which is great, Dave and I were actually talking about it yesterday in terms I don't think we've read one that was more entertaining.
Oh, as far as I'm concerned, Robert Horry is the king of the players.
That's right.
They're good. They're engaging. The stories are good. You go there.
But How to Be a Big Shot, that one where your opening pair, your lead is your quick thoughts. And one of the thoughts you had was Dennis Rodman is a genius. Mm-hmm. But you didn't go on further in the article talking about what you meant there. Because I don't think that anyone would infer. I think people infer you mean that as a basketball genius, not the guy who, you know, goes to North Korea and hangs out with Kim Jong-un.
Maybe he's a diplomatic genius. We don't know.
Maybe he's a spy. We don't know.
maybe he is a genius, like genius, and he's really brokering peace in Korea. But as of now, I think you meant it basketball genius.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Robin with guys on the podcast, and they've always said one thing we've heard is no one ever stronger.
DDP, the wrestler. We talked about DDP. Remember how
he went into Carmelo?
Yeah. So he said it's all tendon strength. He said he's never locked up with a guy who he just felt instantly was like out of this world strong.
Yes. You know, the thing about Rodman is I said he was a genius because I want you to think about the things he did on the court. He could look at a ball and run to the spot nine times to see where the ball is going to go for a rebound. Yeah. He understood it. If he will look at a ball, all of a sudden you see him go the other way, because he knew he had no chance of getting that rebound. And the other thing is, if he comes down to his free throws, you ever see him miss one that they need it? Mm. No. And you see him miss those when they up like 15, he does the antics. That was all, you know, brought in to give him his persona. I sat there when I had the pleasure of playing with him, and I sat there and practiced one day. I came back in the ice, and I saw him shooting free throws. I saw him make 100 free throws in a row. You know how hard that is?
Yeah.
And he sat there, and his form is perfect. Like, you know, but I think with him, though, he was so engaged in his character that it took him out of what was reality. But he, as far as watching him on the court, he knew how to box out. He played to his strengths. Even though, you know, the young Rodman in the Detroit Pistons could jump, but when he got to the Bulls, it was all about positioning and strength and getting no rebound. He was amazing. He was amazing.
Yeah, I loved watching Rodman play. He frustrated the hell out of me, though, as a Sonics fan growing up. And I'll never forget that finals. And Sean Kemp was at his peak, and no one could really stop him. And then all of a sudden, Rodman comes in there. And you'd think that a physical freak like Sean Kemp would be gobbling up rebounds like nobody's business. And there's Rodman kind of still stealing the show from him. Again, Robert's here for NBA.com. Tickets go on sale for All-Star events today. You buy another 10 a.m. today. I got my
tickets.
You got your tickets?
Hope you got like 20.
Yeah, I got like 50.
Okay. Yeah, you can buy them at nbatickets.com.
I got the max.
$15.
Yeah, it's a bargain.
You can even afford that. Sam McKee, even behind the glass, you can afford to go.
Nah.
All-Star weekend, $15. Cunning.
It's going to be a cool time, and there's some new like initiatives they got going on the NBA Center Court, the new technology.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. You know, NBA is always trying to find different ways to transform itself, and you know, that's the thing about it. It's such a global brand, and it's such a giving back, and this is a way to give back. You know, have fans interact with players from the future, from the past, and players of the present. I wouldn't say future because that'd be amazing too, wouldn't it?
Well, but no, past and the games in Toronto, we've seen that. Yeah.
But it's
maybe
great
never once people yeah. come here in February and they're like, oh, wait, this might not have been the best idea for our players.
No, it's good because think about it. It was in New York last year and it was freezing. Right, yeah, but, you know.
It was in Dallas and there was a snowstorm like two,
yeah,
three,
I went to that one.
Ago.
Yeah, I was very amazed. I looked down, all of a sudden my feet were covered in snow. I'm like, where are we? In Texas or Toronto, you know?
I think Canada gets kind of a bad rap for being so cold. Like, you look at even, like, we were watching football, going back to football this week, but you look at Minnesota.
I was just about to say that.
Seahawks-Minnesota game.
My goodness.
And it was, it's not even comparable. Like, I can't remember.
I spent, I lived for 4 years in New Brunswick out east, like the Maritimes.
Sure, but Toronto in general. Yeah, let's not put lump Canada in. We have the Arctic up here. Mm-hmm. We know it gets cold. There's minus 40 up here. Like, that's a real thing.
I'm just honest. If I would have played with the Minnesota Vikings or the Seattle, I would have quit that day. Like, I quit, man. It's just too cold. That was ridiculous.
Hey, let me ask something. You know, we were talking about Rodman before. Do you think, and I want to kind of ask you about your evolution as a player, but do you think if Rodman was starting out today, some coach when he was in middle school or high school would have said, pulled him out to the three-point line and said, get comfy here. Like, you need to develop this shot. And maybe he wouldn't have gotten some of those skills under the basket.
You know, that's the thing that I really hate about AAU basketball now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about pressing.
Right,
shooting threes and dunking. You know, where is the basis? Where is the foundation where you're teaching these kids how to hit a 15-foot jumper, how to set a proper pick? You know, if you watch guys now, if you watch 30 guys do a pick and roll in the NBA, maybe one out of that 30 will roll out the proper way. And it's just so disheartening because AAU has brought in these guys now. Because not all the coaches now. I don't want to say all the coaches, but guys now are trying to find that quick payday for a guy. Oh, this is my next Wiggins. Oh, this is my next, you know, Randall. And that I can get to a payday. You know, teach these kids the skill set that they will understand now that they get in the NBA. It's not about me. It's about we.
You think we're going to continue to see more of people like we've seen now? Somebody coming in, Ben Simmons, who people think kind of replicates LeBron James. And then now you mentioned these AAU guys, all these kids kind of shooting threes now. You think that we're going to start seeing more and more and more guys drift out to the three-point line, tons of shooting? Or do you think Steph Curry, this kind of a one-off dude, and things will kind of go back to the mean?
Who can tell? You know, sports is so trendy, especially when it comes to basketball. And I think I watched Ben Simmons the other day. And what impressed me most about him, he knows the game.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
And he's not afraid as a freshman to tell everybody, no, you get over here. No, you run in this play. And for me, I was so impressed by him that he gave up the ball one time. I said, no, you have the advantage and you do your thing. I go down here and rebound now. And right there, that lets me know that he has a great upbringing because his dad played basketball.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which makes a huge difference. He's taught the proper way to play. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at people, I cover the Lakers, so I'm talking about Larry Nance Jr. If you look at him play, you can tell that his basketball IQ is a whole nother level compared to Randall, who's on the team, who gets mad because, you're stopping me from doing my favorite move. Now my whole game is out of whack because I can't do anything else, you know. And if you look at Nance, it's, okay, you're going to stop this? No matter. I can still play defense and get rebounds. So it makes a big difference. And that goes back to what I said of playing a lot of minutes in college, meaning more than just 1 year, and, you know, the way you brought up.
Yeah, the one-year college thing has really kind of dramatically changed the NBA, I think.
I think if I was a commissioner, you'd be mad at me because you had to be 20 before you came in the NBA.
See, I always thought about it as, like, I think you should have the right to make money. And so I think that there should be special exceptions. The guys, if you want to make money, like, you can go in. But if you choose to go to college, you got to go for at least 2 years.
Yeah, I still say 20 years old. Yeah. Nobody talks about the greatest sport in America, which is the NFL. Yeah. I know people say, well, that's a different type. That's a manly. No, every professional sport is a manly. When you're getting paid X amount of dollars to do this and that you have to be responsible as an adult and to your community. And a lot of these guys, they think they're bigger than the game itself, which makes me upset. Like, appreciate the game. You're not big. You know, it's not a rite of passage. It's one of those things where you need to give back and understand that this is a privilege, not a, you should respect it.
I get that. I just think that sometimes when you're a commodity, like even you talk about college football, like that Leonard Fournette right now, also down at LSU. He's a guy who, if he's in the NFL right now, he's making millions of dollars, and now he has to play another year of football and risk injury, and, like, he's worth millions of dollars right now. It's scary to me that that guy could break his leg next year, tear his league.
Dude. That's why you have insurance. But see, the thing about football, you know what I'm saying? Okay, let's say he does come out. he's not guaranteed. You know, you go out and you be a bust. You know, look at RG3.
At least he's getting that first contract.
Yeah, he got that one contract, but it's going to go out the window because guys don't understand finances. That's one of the things that I love about the relationship that BBVA has with the NBA. They're trying to teach these kids in the importance of finance and understand that this game is going to disappear one day. But your future is going to always be there, and you got to understand to keep that money locked up and don't be flashing, buying all these things that you do not need.
Okay, so an example of a guy who came out of high school, but dad also played, we got to ask you about at least a second on this, is Kobe. So, and the coming, not going to college didn't really hamper him too much.
Yeah.
unless his career numbers look like his numbers from this year. So, again, in your Players Tribune article, you wrote about how his mentality and just the insatiable desire he has to get better. And I love the stuff about betting him about drop kicking it from half and getting it in. And it's like, yeah, actually could see that. I think that's the one player, right, that you buy into with that. Do you think that, though, his competitive nature's kind of turned on him a little bit, and he added that maybe that extra year, maybe two, where he probably was maybe better off hanging him up? Or do you like the way that he's going out?
You know, I'm liking the way he's going out because he's giving the fans what they want. And, you know,
the Jeter tour.
Exactly. And I can relate to this, you know. My last game as a professional was a DNIP. Did not play. And it, I don't want to say it, but it pissed me off.
Yeah, you can swear on this podcast.
It pissed me off because, you know, you don't want to go out like that. You come in as a rookie and you starting as a rookie. And all of a sudden you're looking at the guy playing in front of you. And I'm like, dude, I'm way better than you right now.
Right.
But because of the coaching saying, okay, out with the old, in with the new, you ended up on a bit, and it's disheartening. I know what Kobe wants to do. I know in his mind he says, I don't want to go out with an injury. I want to go out walking off the court, playing, waving to those fans, saying goodbye like that. And I can understand it. But the only thing I wish he would have did is that he would have just said, hey, this year, okay, let me dial back my minutes. But him being a competitor, I want to play all these minutes. Yeah. And it's a wear and tear, so he got hurt.
You look at that game the other night where Lou Williams is going off, and it's like, Lou's got to get the last shot.
You knew Kobe's taking
it's Kobe
that.
Again.
You know Kobe's taking
like just,
it.
Just ripping a win from the Lakers.
What did Williams have? Like, Lou will have 40. 30 in the fourth quarter or something
23
crazy.
23 in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my God.
The only thing that really bugs me about the Kobe retirement tour is seeing him getting, like, cheered in Boston and cheered in Philadelphia.
I think
it's like, don't you think it'd be more respectful if they booed him? Like, that's when, like, you know, like, you still hate Kobe when you cheer for him. It makes you feel sad. Like,
You know, you said that he actually said he would prefer the boos, but at the end of the day, you want to be cheered. You want to know those fans appreciated what you brought to the game and what you did for the game of basketball. And I don't care what he says, deep down in his heart, he's loving it like crazy that these people are cheering
for
him and they're booing
him. For sure. Yeah. I get that feeling too. So Coach Pop, he gave you the DMP. He benched you last game.
Yeah, that's probably why I don't like him that much.
Wow, yeah. Listen, for good reason.
Yeah, you know, I love Pop, you know, but it's just some things he and I didn't see eye to eye on. And it's just how it is. When you're a competitive person, going up against a competitive person, it's just like your mom and pop. Your mom and pop are going to tell you the vegetables. You're going to say no. They're going to say, yeah, you know, one of y'all going to win out. And, and at the end of the day, you're still going to have love for that person. And I just, you know, for me, being the smart aleck that I am and me understanding basketball and understanding what's best. And, you know, they actually had a thing in San Antonio called that's just the Robert Horry way. You know, because it took them a while to understand that. I'm not.
You call that winning?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's like, I don't make the product. I just make the product better. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Who's the one guy in San Antonio that doesn't get enough credit for their success? Because Pop gets a ton of it, right?
Pop gets way too much.
So, right.
You know, I know. And it's going to sound weird, but I think Tim. You know, Tim and Bruce Bourne are the two guys that were...
Oh, speaking of guys I couldn't stand during
a base for the team, you know. Tim was a type of person. He's like that, you know, that story of the young bull and the old bull. You know, he was that guy that would sit there and all of a sudden everything would be going right. Then it'd go wrong. He'd sit there and just wait. If it go wrong too long, he's going to say, hey, I'm the big dog. Come back to what, brought, you know, bread and put the butter on the table and all that kind of thing. So I think with him, the understanding of his role and knowing when to step up and when not to step up is a major key for that team.
And, you know, Bruce Bowen, you mentioned, he's a funny dude away from basketball. Tim Duncan, I get the feeling, is a really funny dude. Like, his sense of humor is good. No,
not really.
I think he's got that. Like,
he's a swimmer. He's a weirdo.
You know what? If you're going to talk about video games and cars, you got him. You know,
he's got the nerd sense of humor.
He's a great guy. He's actually funny, but he's really, really corny.
Okay.
That sounds like Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods does the same thing. He's into video games and he's caught and away from the game, kind of a nerd. Like, that's kind of the MO.
I guess whatever works. But I remember, like, I think it was like the NBA Greatest Moments, one of those videos they put out. And it's he's doing the press conference after you guys won the title, after you hit a big shot. And he's talking about, like, you know, Robert, he just chills until it's time to hit a game winner. That's it. And then you're in there. He goes, oh, hey, what's up? Like, it's just good time.
Yeah, that's what he said, But Tim's, you know, funny thing about it, Tim is a great guy. And he's one of those guys. And this is the thing that I don't think a lot of fans understands. Like, you know, even though you see us on TV and you think that you know us, you really don't know us. Yeah. And when we're out with our kids, we don't get that much time to spend with our kids because we're on the road for 4 months of the year. So we appreciate more when you just say hi and I respect what you do. Don't want to come and have a conversation with me and talk about basketball. Mm-hmm. If I'm with my kids, you don't want nobody bugging you when you with your kids. Let us enjoy our kids. We're human beings. We bleed blood just like you do. And so just, you know,
you don't want
that
me
time.
Coming up to you in the grocery store asking about the triangle?
No, especially and really don't bug me if I'm eating. Yeah. That's the biggest pet peeve. People don't understand. Like, if you ever see a professional athlete out and you walk into a restaurant and you see them walk in and you say, that's such and such. We can hear you say that, right? And then all of a sudden we sit down, and you finish your meal, and then you come over and interrupt my meal. My friends laugh because I will ignore you like you don't even exist.
You wonder who I made that mistake with?
Who?
Bo Jackson.
But you got to understand, if you're going to do something,
no, I didn't get a
do it now before we start, because that's rude. Don't interrupt someone's meal, especially when you want to shake your hand. Dude, I don't know if you just came from the bathroom or you've been petting the dog or not. Nah, I'm not going to shake your hand while I'm eating my meal.
That's what
Bo
told me.
Be respectful, you know? So
in much more foul language, that's what Bo told me.
Again, Robert. Did he say get the F away from me?
Robert's here.
I wish he said that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems like you got off light if that's the case. Again, Robert's here promoting tickets, which go on sale for the NBA All-Star game.
NBA
All-Star
Center
weekend.
Court is the big kind of fan venue at the All-Star weekend. And all weekend, there's going to be cool stuff going on there. SportsNet's going to be there as well.
What's the one thing you're looking forward to the most out of all the periphery stuff? Like NBA All-Star, celebrity game,
You know what?
Yeah, it already practice. Happened. He met me, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, okay, interviewing Robert Horry, clearly.
Other than Big Shot Bob.
But, like, there's
I like the celebrity game.
There's a legend.
Me too.
I like there's to see a legend, who can play.
There's a legends brunch I didn't know about.
Yeah, it's, you know,
I think that would be an interesting one.
You know, All-Star was in Houston a couple of years back, and we had the legends brunch, and I got honored there. And you think it's going to be a fun event, and it's weird. I get up there, and all of a sudden, all these emotions coming because, you know, I know for me to make the Hall of Fame is going to be very hard because the only thing people look at is points. And so
they look at rings, too, though.
Yeah, I know. But to be honored by the NBA, it was like my all-star. So next thing you know, I'm doing the speech, and I start boo-hooing. I'm like, oh, crap, where did these emotions come from? And I was like, it came from me having that and the fact that this was such a great honor for me to be honored by the NBA in the city I started out with and the fact that my daughter who passed away wasn't there. So all these emotions start hitting me, and I'm up there like, and then I'm like, wow. And then I think a lot of it had to do with me also promoting my ex-wife's book, which talks about, you know, it's called A Glamorous Sacrifice, growing up with, you know, a daughter who has all these disabilities and, you know, then her passing away. And it was a very emotional time for me. And I look back and I said, dude, why did you start crying? You know, it was that's the love and passion that you have for the NBA.
Yeah.
And to be honored like that was such an amazing thrill for me.
Do you remember who was there? Because I'm sure you're looking at guys who you admired and you're surrounded by all these people. That helps bring out those emotions.
Yeah, you know, and it was, you know, I remember, you know, Calvin Murphy was, you know, he the one that says I deserve to be in the Hall, Dikembe Mutombo. And the bad thing was about it, I had to follow Dikembe Mutombo. Mm-hmm. Imagine is such a great speaker and he commands an audience because of that voice. Yeah. You know, it was just, you know, it was hard. And of course, you know, my idol growing up, Hakeem Olajuwon, was those four guys got honored. And for me to be on the same stage and be in front of all those legends, you know, Oscar Robertson, Dr. J, you know, the man himself, Bill Russell, it was so amazing. Though my great late friend, Daryl Dawkins, those were like emotions that just, you know, to be honored in front of that cast. And that many people was overwhelming for me.
I'm glad you brought up the Hall of Fame there, just because I've heard other guys. I actually heard Kenny Smith once talk about why you should be in the Hall of Fame, talking about there would be missing rings without you in certain areas.
Yeah.
You feel like how important is getting in the Hall of Fame for you? You feel you should be there, right?
You know, I feel like I should be there, but here's the thing. If I don't get in, you know, I wouldn't even care. You want to know why?
Okay.
Because once you get into the Hall, they don't talk about you. But once you're not in the hall, over then, they talk about you longer. So I'll be talking about, what about Robert Ory? You could get into controversy.
You could pull a Jahlil Okafor and not some guy interrupts you at dinner and you just knock him out. People be talking about you everywhere.
It's funny. People are like, do you care if you get in the hall? Yes, I do. Do I care? No, I don't. You know, because if you don't get into the hall, it's like everybody's going to still talk about, like, well, why does this guy, and he got rings, and you're going to be debated about. So I'm very excited about that, you know?
But, you know, just quickly bring it back to All-Star Weekend. You guys both mentioned the celebrity game. Mm-hmm. And this year is going to be a cool thing because it's Canada.
Bieber's back?
Canada versus USA. Bieber probably will be back.
Come on, Biebs. Play Biebs.
And the cool thing about that is that I don't know who makes up the Canadian roster. Like, how is that even a contest?
Bieber, Drake,
Wait, and then is you, it like, Canadian like, players?
Gord Downie.
Canadian celebrities, or is it? I'm
Tragically Hip. He's a local like Canadian rock singer.
No one knows who Tragically Hip is south of the border. It's insane. And that, once you hit go past Buffalo, no one knows. Look, you can see everybody in here just shaking their heads. No clue. We're gonna send you guys with some Tragically Hip. We're gonna get a mailing address and send like an iTunes gift card so you can buy.
But this year the celebrity game will be. It's like another layer. It will be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
I love the celebrity game, man.
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
I love seeing the coaches. Kevin Hart kind of ruins it, though, right?
Kevin Hart's a little...
Does he make it better or does he ruin it?
You know what? I think that he brings something to it, but it's like now it's 3 years he's won MVP.
Yeah,
2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, Kevin, you didn't deserve it 1 year. You know, step aside. We enjoy you being there. It was like pass the torch. You know what I mean?
Bill Simmons talks about coaching Kevin Hart and how... Kevin Hart's notion of his skill set is so far different than his actual skill set.
I think
it's hard for a coach.
I think Michael B. Jordan was like legitimately upset with the way that.
Oh, he'll
Kevin
be in
Hart
it this year. Yeah. He'll be there. Yeah,
no, the funny part is like that. He's like the old basketball player who thinks he still has it. No, dog, you don't have it anymore. Those young guys, you might in your mind you still got it, but no, you don't.
Unless you're Arnie Duncan.
Arnie Duncan, unbelievable. He's the Tim Duncan of the All-Star games. We'd be remiss if we didn't get your thoughts a little bit, a couple things on the Raptors before we let you go. You've been really generous with your time. Thanks for that. I know that Dave and I are both talking. You're a guy, again, we've talked about winning. Like, your name comes up when it comes to winning, and that's something that's been missing with this Raptors core the last couple of years. They've made the playoffs 2 years in a row, swept last year pretty embarrassing fashion. They reloaded in the offseason, added Damari Carroll, added Bismack Biyombo, Corey Joseph, out with Amir Johnson. We know the rest. What is this group right now, a team that you can see this core, these guys winning, getting over that next hump, or what is it that they're missing? What do they need? What's that ingredient?
You know, I see them missing is the killer instinct. You know, I see a lot of times when I watch them play, I think they're one of the most talented teams in the NBA. I'm a huge DeMar DeRozan fan, and I think he's one of the top two guards in the league. Yep. But I think sometimes they rely on their skill set than other than team skill set. You know, I think I watched them play. They don't have a go-to play. They don't have go-to plays down the stretch. You know, it's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to go one-on-one? Which is not going
to
happen.
That seems to be their go-to play.
Yeah, and you have to have somewhere some guys come off some screens and shoot some J's. You have to have something to go to. And I don't think that's what they're missing. Other than that, they're a talented group. They need a shot blocker. So, because, you know, what they have is they have a team with a lot of athletic guys. If you get you a shot blocker back there in the back and you get up and press those guys and play great defense and understand be back by help to help and stuff, they could be right there giving, you know, Cleveland fits, you know, Miami fits and Chicago fits. But they're, to me right now, they're the third best team in the East, but they should be, they
behind
might be two.
Cleveland, Chicago. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that a couple weeks ago. But so how do you develop a killer instinct? That seems to me like something you have or you don't.
Yeah. Well, it just comes with time. You know, and some guys have it and some guys don't. You know, you got to understand what's at hand and understand your weaknesses as well as your strengths. And you have to play to your strengths and cover up your weaknesses.
I think those playoff losses might help develop that, you know.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Because getting swept, think about it, we got swept by Utah
right
one time.
Yeah, exactly.
And the next thing you know, even though we changed our lineup, you know, we went, you know, we got rid of a lot of talent and we brought in a new coach, and next thing you know, we win three championships. You got to fall down a lot of times before you can get up and understand what's at hand. And I think getting swept, it smacks you in the face, and it smacks you in your face hard, because losing 4-3, we tried our best, but getting swept is embarrassing.
Especially, I mean, the Raptors, that fourth game in the last playoffs, they just rolled over.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being on that plane heading back home thinking, like, I'm never going to let this
happen.
Some
of the offseason stuff from Lowry and DeRozan, though, like, we talked, when Dave and I went to Media Day, the first thing that was so apparent was the body transformations of of the backcourt of Lowry and DeRozan. And mm-hmm. so these guys have dialed in a little bit more. So hopefully we end up seeing that a little bit more this mm-hmm. season. Is this a team you think would be fun to play on? Yeah, for you? Yeah, you'd want to play on this team?
You know, for me, they're so athletic and they're so fun to okay. watch. But yeah. My style of play wouldn't. It depends on which Robert Orr you want. You want the 92 to 2000 Robert Orr or the 2000 to 2015 yeah, yeah. Robert Orr?
Probably use the latter one. Need a little bit more veteran experience, more shooting from the corners.
See, that one I would be perfect because at that point in my career, I wasn't afraid to, you know, smack people beside the head and get them in line.
Which they might need.
And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what sometimes you got to need. You got to be that guy that's not afraid to hurt someone's feelings and then mm-hmm. you know, give them a hug at the end of the day. And I think sometimes guys are so sentimental. They're not thick-skinned anymore. If you tell them, I said, you suck tonight, they might not speak to you for 3 months. You
that's kind of like what the Suns owner, Sarver, was talking about.
Millennials.
You know, saying with millennials, this generation of athlete, you yes. know, they don't deal with adversity as well, you know.
And you know what? Believe it or not, it all boils back to AAU because these guys, they were put on pedestals and they were saying, you were the best thing since, you know, milk. And so you have to start, you know, slapping guys upside the head and tell them you suck. Dude, you don't be afraid. Like, dude, you did not play defense tonight. You suck. And guys, like, they pout and get mad instead of, like, getting upset that you didn't play and say, okay, coach, I'm going to show you the next day. I'm going to lock this dude up.
It's the participation trophy era of sports. That's what it is.
You know, I
blame
the parents. You know, everybody got mad at the football player for giving the trophy back. I would have did the same
thing. James Harrison.
You know, I had a debate with a girl in a restaurant one time. We were sitting there. She said, well, I think every guy who participates should get a trophy. I said, all right, think about it like this. I said, I bet you was a smart person. Let me guess, valedictorian? He says, yes. I said, how would you feel if I got all else and at the end of the school when we graduated, I got up and gave a speech just like you gave a speech? Yeah. That's not the same. Yes, it is the same because you're getting rewarded for being the best.
Winning versus losing.
Would you give the you sucked on defense speech? You suck?
Yes, I would give it. Yeah. And people don't understand that. If you break it down to like, if you're the valedictorian, you give a speech in school, mm-hmm. you give the speech, not everybody in that school. That's not fair. So if you're the best team, you should be rewarded. If you're the mm-hmm. second best team, you should go home and freaking practice to try to be the best team. It's inspiration to try to be the best. And it pisses me off so much that these parents like, oh, he should get a trophy. But what? I give you a piece of paper, say you participated.
Exactly.
You know, but trophy, fine. Nah.
No one's keeping that piece of paper. I might as well tell you now.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more on that one. Again, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You guys have been great, man. I appreciate all this invasion cool. today. Yeah.
And again, anytime, tickets. Dude. Go get them.
NBA All-Star,
NBA Center Court, NBA All-Star.
$15. Everybody can afford this. Even people who listen to free podcasts.
Do you have a big viewer audience with ladies?
Yep.
You know, this is the perfect Valentine's Day gift.
This has been the biggest viewer audience with ladies we've ever had.
And it's probably the prettiest too, right?
200%.
Not even close.
Not close. Well, actually, sorry, Mom. Mom, I know you listen to all these. I take it all back.
JD loves his mama.
I do. Come on.
You're supposed to. She gave you life.
She did.
Yeah. Okay, listen. Really appreciate it. Again, everyone gets All-Star Weekend. Everyone, check out Robert Orr. You on Twitter?
Come see him
Instagram,
during dinner, whenever.
Kind of
just chat him up.
You know, I'm on Twitter.
Yeah. At R Orr?
At RK Orr. Everybody said, why you didn't do Big Shot Bob? Because I am RK Orr. So that's why I put that. You know, Big Shot Bob was just that persona I did on court.
I'm sure there's no Alabama football tweets on there at all. You can just go on.
I did not tweet. It's some things when it's understood, you don't have to tweet it. You know what I mean? It's understood that we're the best college in America. You know what I'm saying? University of Alabama.
Right,
I'm not just talking
today.
About football. I'm talking about basketball, baseball, golf, tennis, academics, everything.
We'll get that basketball.
Should have been a little higher.
Oh, yeah, and academics.
All right. All right. Listen, they go to school.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks
for doing this. That was awesome.
Hi, this is Muggsy Bogues. When I wake up in the morning, I'm listening to Free Association.
All right, welcome back to Free Association. Thanks again to Robert Orr for that, and make sure you check it all that NBA, what's it called, Center Court.
I kind of hate that I like Robert Orr now. I'm just going to say it. Like, yeah, you can never have Bruce Bowen in here.
You came into this interview talking some tough talk, and he defused you pretty quickly there.
Yeah, he was a nice guy.
He was very, very nice.
He defused me by talking about movies and weird cab drivers. That was the first
thing. The other thing is, like, I felt like we could have kept going for an hour, 2 hours. No complaints.
Yeah, and thanks to the people from NBA.com for letting me keep us. I think I have an answer for your David Bowie question well off the top. You want to reset what the question was?
Who is the NBA's equivalent of David Bowie?
Okay, so
you and I both discussed that we thought it might be Vince, but he's not universally loved.
Well, Vince just in the sense that he's evolved his game a lot.
Right. We talked about it with Ori.
But yeah, but he's not universally loved.
But I got one for you. And I'm wondering how you'll feel with this one. Mm. Andre Iguodala.
Really?
Universally liked.
Really? That's a
very popular guy.
It's an interesting one. I mean, is he a surefire Hall of Famer? Because
no, I didn't really think about that when it came to the credentials.
But he does have an NBA Finals MVP to his name.
He does, and he's been a perennial all-star guy. But I will say that he's a guy who early on in his career was a slasher, a scorer, the go-to guy in Philly for a bunch of years, and then now has changed his game to be more of... He was never known really as a good shooter. Now he's drastically improved his three-point shooting, especially from the corner.
No, he's definitely evolved. A bench and he's definitely popular.
A guy that has had a couple of different looks, at least in his career.
Respected in and out of the industry.
Played in three different places. All three places kind of were different asking look. Different things of him.
No, I like it. Iguodala.
Kind of tough to be Bowie, though, because Bowie had like 100 different things, right?
Iguodala is today's NBA equivalent.
Let's go with that. Although, again, maybe not the star power of
thing. On the Sixers, he kind of was the star.
He was. I remember for years, Raptors fans lamented not having...
Charlie V. That was it. The pick.
They were like, why did we not have Andre Iguodala?
Listen, we got to wrap this up, but really quick, you mentioned Vince Carter earlier. Check out Sportsnet Magazine right now.
So good.
You can find it on Next Issue. You can find it on your tablets, the Sportsnet app. Subscribers, we had it in their mailbox. There's an oral history that I put together on Vince Carter.
Yeah, shout out to you. It's really something.
Vince Carter at the 2000 Dunk Contest. Thank you. It was
Kenny Smith is in there.
Kenny Smith, Jerry Stackhouse, Steve Brown. It's a big list.
It's a really, really good piece.
One of my favorite parts, Terrence Ross at the end talking about kind of the homage he paid, and Vince touches on that as well.
Yeah, you should write more things where you don't write and guys tell you cool stories.
Well, that's insulting. Clearly, you haven't read my stuff because you wouldn't say that if you read my fine work. But I will say that I've done a bunch of oral histories, and that's easily my most favorite thing to do
really
because
you're
as told by the guys who were there. I mean, it's as good
you
as
you did
gets.
Not run with that joke. You were like, no, do not insult my craft.
I'm diffusing this
now. Right. It's over. Dave Zarum's a good writer.
Listen, I hope you enjoyed that show. That was cool. Again, thanks to Robert Ori. Anything else? Am I forgetting something? I feel like I'm forgetting a lot, but whatever.
Emil Delich wanted us to mention that Michael Beasley scored 62 points in all Chinese All-Star
69
games,
points.
Whatever.
69 points, 13 assists, 13 boards.
Great.
And who cares? Actually, I love Michael Beasley. Cool Beasley.
Yeah, we do like Michael Beasley.
He's been on the show. You know, that might have been in our demo years.
It was.
We're going to play his FAQ. Maybe we need to play it again. It was good. Anyways, this is Free Association. He's JD Bunkus, at JD Bunkus. I'm Dave Zarum, at Dave Zarum. iTunes, sportsnet.ca, The Fan. Where else?
Your ears.
Your ears. You are listening to Free Association and now you're not.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.